Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes, Caught Offside from just outside of New York City, from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. Whew. What's up, brother?
I shouldn't be allowed to speak first. Let's have Alex Ferguson.
I can't believe it. Football, by the hell.
Yeah.
Never have truer words been spoken. Football, bloody hell.
Oh, man. This competition, when it's at its best, there's not much that compares with it. This was so good. And, you know, I was thinking about, look, we do this in the Champions League and in March Madness are the two areas where I think of it most, where we love the upset. We like to see the underdogs. We like to see, you know, that unexpected run. But, you know, I know I enjoy it. And when it's happening, I celebrate it. But, man, there is something about getting to this stage in the competition, and it's just a lot of, like, it's the giants of the game, and they're just going toe to toe, and they're at their best. Goals are like, again, no offense to the Minnows, you make this stuff fun, but there is also a lot of joy to be had in watching some of these big teams just duke it out against each other in these heavyweight bouts. It's fun.
I don't think you'll agree with me on this, but the results, which we're going to talk about the matches, because there's so much to talk about from the quarterfinal second legs of the Champions League. But it's a palate cleanser for me to not have a Liverpool, to not have a Man City, to not like I know Arsenal haven't been in this realm, in this zone for a while, but I'm like, I wouldn't have begrudged them getting through at all. In fact, I was fine with it, but it's no harm that they're not. It's like to not have Premier League involvement in the semi-final, for me at least, I think is a good thing. It's refreshing, and it didn't
in what
feel,
way? Elaborate.
Because we get to learn different stories and talk about different players, and we don't rehash Pep brain, and we're not talking about Arsenal's lack of a centre forward, and we're not saying about, you know, trademark copyrighted nights at Anfield. You know, like, we get to talk about different things. Those have all had their moment, but like, you try and tell me that it's not a net gain for everybody that the Westfalenstadion will host the semi-final leg. Yeah. Don't tell me it isn't. Like, don't tell me it's not a good thing that we get to see, with the obvious caveats that always hang over them, but that we have Mbappe, that we have Vitinho, that we have Zaire Emery in the semi-final.
Just say those three letters.
I won't say it. You know, those are good things. To have a storyline like the weirdness of Bayern Munich season, like the total oddball season that they're having, and to have a gentleman, a fine young man like Jude Bellingham, and that weird outfit too, that is Real Madrid, Vibes FC, to be in the semi-final. This is all good things. Maybe it's just me because we spend so much time talking about the Premier League. I love this. Miguel Delaney tweeted, no English club in the Champions League semi-finals for the first time since 2020, and only the second time since 2017. And then some balding smart arse. So twice in the last 7 years, .. And Miguel makes the point. They, meaning English teams, have occupied more than 50% of final places in that time. So there's been a lot of Premier League, and it's sure. no harm to have a break and remind ourselves how good European football can be.
Totally agree. But by the same token, I wouldn't go so far the other way. Like, I've seen a little bit of the, like, well, maybe the Premier League's not as good as we thought. No. I still think it is. I still believe it is the best league in the world, and I don't believe that this is necessarily the only gauge as to how we determine that.
Yeah, and there's things to be factored into what happened in the last few days. Like, Borussia Dortmund's season has been, they've been nowhere in the league. The league has been decided in Germany for how long?
Yeah.
So it definitely gives Dortmund and Bayern Munich a chance to focus in very, very hard on a cup set. And don't forget that, like, maybe not so much a cup set in the case of Dortmund versus Atleti, but it's certainly in the case of Bayern Munich knocking out one of the best.
Is that a cup set? Bayern beating Arsenal?
In the context of the seasons they were having, 100%. In the context of where both clubs are now,
I don't know what the odds makers had it as, but I don't see
Bayern Munich beaten by Baden-Baden in the league. You know, relegation sides knocking the out of them in the Bundesliga, and Arsenal on course are in a title race up until Sunday. Like, I still think if you put that Arsenal team out against that Bayern Munich team, a lot of times Arsenal will prevail. But it just goes to show you there's still good players on that Bayern side. And there's also something to be factored into the fact that you can singularly focus in on a game, nullify your opponent who might be superior than you, and win a game. Liverpool did it in 2005. Cup football is different, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. And, you know, we do see...
You can make an argument for the Premier League, and I'd factor it into a number of things that led into the games going the way they did over the last few days. But, you know, City, Arsenal, like, relentless in the Premier League, trying to best each other. Like, a really, every game really super intense at the top of the table, playing sides who have, let's put it this way, they can, I wouldn't say relax in their leagues, but they certainly can focus and give more energy towards the Champions League.
Yeah. I mean, that will, you know, and we'll see how that continues now.
There's lots of factors. And I will also admit this. There are very, very fine players playing in European football, in European clubs. And, like, you know, they're capable of these results. But yeah, let's get on with it. What are we doing here?
Well, here we'll go into the first one, probably the most marquee of the four different fixtures that went on in the quarterfinal stage, and that was Real Madrid and Manchester City. And Real Madrid, they do it. They go to the Etihad, and they right the wrong of last year, and they defeat Manchester City, the defending champions. Real Madrid knock them out.
Yeah.
This game was, it may not have been. The entertainment value of this one was not on display in the way that it was in the first leg, or maybe even in some of these other games that happened in the second leg. But there was something about this game that was so interesting to me.
Compelling, Andrew, is the word.
Well, it was very compelling because I think these are the two best teams in the world. And so just the fact that it was kind of a razor's edge margin between them in the second leg is always, you can't help but have that be compelling. It was just so tight. But I don't know. There's something... I don't know, Real Madrid, like, it's this brand, it's this giant of the sport. It's, you know, seeing them kind of like tail, like, Real Madrid doesn't change for anyone, but like watching the respect that it seemed like they had for Manchester City was very interesting to me. And it worked. They went on and won this game, but like, right. We'll get into the specifics of it, but just They scored in the 12th minute, Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have a shot again after that. Their next chance in the game wasn't until the 105th, when Rudiger kind of had a half chance.
Wasn't their first corner, like, somewhere towards the end of the game, or even extra time?
That might be. I just remember they basically went from the 12th to 105th without really having a chance in between.
Right.
And it's just... some of that is the respect that they have, I think, for Manchester City. Some of that maybe is kind of informing their decisions off of what happened at the Etihad a year ago. When
they had one corner.
Yeah. Like
City at 18.
but you know, by the same token, it's something that I've always said about Real Madrid, and it's something that I really respect about them. You know, we like teams to have an identity. There's something neat and tidy and comfortable about that. Real Madrid, we've talked about this for years now. They can win any way they want. They're the most lethal counterattacking team in the world, in world football, I believe. But they can possession you to death. They can press you.
City, though, is the point.
But when they need to, they can low block and defend you to death. They can win. It's a testament to the players, to the management, to just the history of the club. Like there's just any number of ways that they can beat you. And this is one that they don't often bust out because it's Real Madrid and they can usually out-talent anyone. But Manchester City might be the only team in the world that they can't necessarily out-talent. And so they find another way and it worked. They went there, they won.
It's a good juncture for us to go to Irishman Jude Bellingham, who spoke to BT Sports, Rio Ferdinand, Laura Woods, Jolene Lescott after the game. By the way, I'd like to remind you, in the midst of this piece of audio you're about to hear, just tell yourself this kid is 20. Think of the way he speaks and compare him unfavorably to others of the same age. But here he is talking about how Carlo sets the team up, or kind of doesn't set them up.
How important is Carlo? He was obviously managing England, managed everywhere,
yeah,
and been hugely successful. Give us some little behind-the-scenes nuggets that he gives you guys to go out there and to be able to perform the way you do, under stress sometimes, but also when you can go and blow teams away.
I think our biggest strength is that he finds a way to let a lot of the boys play with freedom. I think, you know, some teams are a bit more structured in terms of the passing styles and the patterns of play, and it's really interesting to watch, and it's definitely difficult to play against. But I think one of our kind of biggest strengths is that we're so kind of off the cuff, if that makes sense. And you know, as a man as well, he just fills you with calmness and confidence. Before the game there, I caught him yawning. And I said to him, "Boss, are you tired?" And he went, "Yeah, you need to go and excite me out there." So that's the kind of confidence and calmness he brings.
So that was really illuminating to me, because it's kind of what we've always suspected about them. They're a vibe team. They're not... I agree with you. They were definitely set up to absorb for most of that game. But I think part of that is what structurally... as Bellingham alluded to, City do to you. Like, they're very, very difficult. But City's structure kind of fell apart. How many times did we see Doku versus Carvajal after Grealish went off? How many times? Oh, he's beating him. Cross, cut out. Oh, he's beating him. Well, cross, across the goal.
Yeah, but that is what led to their goal. I mean, yeah, they scored on Doku beating his man, playing one that gets knocked out to De Bruyne's feet, and he scored. So it did. It is what finally.
I mean, all it did
this
was
Real Madrid defensive barrier.
Yeah, I mean, it elongated the match, but it didn't win the game for them ultimately. But I'm just saying, like, it was interesting for him to talk about, to use the term "off the cuff," like off the cuff. Anybody, you know, I always go back to what James Milner said about Jurgen Klopp. He said, yeah, you know, his training's really intense. Like, you know, the amount of detail that goes into where you're positioning versus where the ball is, the amount of detail that goes into your pressing and the type of press you do at any point in the game is huge. Like, we don't hear the term "off the cuff" anymore. And again, I use the term refreshment, refreshing. Isn't it kind of refreshing? Although for Real Madrid, they've been doing it for the past decade, probably. But isn't it nice for a team like them to take apart what is, you know, Florence and the Machine? It was basically, look at what we are doing here, structural, very, very choreographed, coordinated, everybody doing what they're supposed to do, everybody knowing their roles, some players being limited by their roles since they've joined the club. We'll talk about him in a second.
The him being
Jack Grealish.
Yeah.
Because I sent you a video. And then we've got like there was very much of by the end of that game, both teams were tired. We saw the I want to say one.
I didn't know Rodri could barely stand, it looked like.
Yeah, but Jude Bellingham could barely move either. Yeah. And as I said, he's articulate and 20. Carvajal. I don't think it's anatomically ideal if you're cramping in both legs to have your teammates run over and stretch both legs at once. I don't think it does anything. But like, what a game he had! What an unbelievable game!
And he's got the right amount of Eshauser-y too. Like, I feel like he's found the right balance of that. He's not. I don't know that.
He's still likable. You see,
yeah. People who might maybe watch La Liga who are Real Madrid haters. If you're a Barcelona fan and Atletico, maybe you'll disagree. But yeah, like, you know, the way he handled and look, Doku came in and did a good job. But like, what was it when Doku has him beat down the left side and kind of puts his arm up and sort of hits Danny Carvajal's chin, and he just like grabs his whole face and goes down and he wins possession. They call a foul on Doku. Like, you know, he's kind of smart in that way, I guess.
But like I've been on the end of it. You know, City are now feeling what Liverpool felt in the Champions League final in Paris in 2022. Like, I know there was a lot of extenuating circumstances prior to the game that may have been playing on Liverpool's players' minds as they went into that. But Liverpool should still have won that game, and yet they did not. Courtois pulled out the game he'll be most remembered for, probably, is that final. He was man of the match. He was unbelievable. And they found a way.
Vinicius.
So,
look. But you know, it's interesting, too, because, like...
There's another side to this, I should say.
On the Manchester City side... Mm-hmm. They didn't win. They're at home. They're really good. So, like, it's obviously there's no joy. There's nothing to be taken from this for Manchester City. But here's what Pep said afterwards about losing. He said, "It is what it is. Sometimes you win on penalties, sometimes not. We should have done it before for how we played. I absolutely don't have any regrets. We did everything offensively and defensively. Football's about scoring goals, and they did it a little better than us from the penalty spot. They're in the semifinals. We are not. I have to say from my heart, thank you to my players."
Is there sometimes you just say fair enough because, you know, Haaland hits the crossbar. He obviously didn't have a very plentiful game. Hits the crossbar. That could have been a goal. De Bruyne
and even the rebound on that, it falls to Bernardo Silva and he's just not ready for it. He had a whole open net.
look at the Kevin De Bruyne chance. It gets cut back to him in the box, side foots it over the bar.
Had the game on his foot there.
One where he'd usually score. So, you know.
I mean, City had 33 shots. I know. Like, they had 9 on target. And, like, Real Madrid, you could say that they set up a certain way and it worked. They were playing with fire a little bit. I mean, to allow Manchester City to have 33 shots, there's a lot of talented players on that team. And look, I will give Real Madrid credit for this. 33 shots, but, like, go back, watch the highlights of the game, rewatch your recording of the game, whatever. There, other than the Haaland off the bar and De Bruyne's late, it's all kind of half chances. It's all a lot of blasts from outside the 18. There's not a whole lot where you're like, oh, they got to score. Other than the De Bruyne, like even the Haaland header off the bar, it's a tough header. He's kind of like fading header. Away with a defender on him. Like if he scores that, you're just like, well, that guy's ridiculous. The De Bruyne one is the only one where I was like, oh my God, they're going to win it here. And he missed it. You know, so I give Real Madrid credit for that. Yeah, 33 shots, but it's a little bit of a, you know, there's more to that number than just how big the number actually is. But it is playing with fire. Phil Foden can score from anywhere. So, you know, we've seen it. De Bruyne can score from anywhere. So, you know, Real Madrid are kind of, they're testing their luck a little bit, and they were on the right side of it.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, I think even the shot, if you look, when Paramount were doing the highlights after the game, the De Bruyne shot where... Lunin makes that save to like camera save. Like it's
going over the bar.
No, but there's another one where he just pams it out.
I was thinking about the late one after he scored.
Sure. No. There's another one where he dives to his right.
Right.
And he just like it's, I wouldn't say it's catchable, but it's like any decent goalkeeper, albeit, I mean, he's technically their third choice. Makes a save of that. So I suppose the next thing for us to go to is the penalties, because
hold on. We should. I mean, we should at least mention the goal that Real Madrid scored in this, which you know, turned the game the way that it did, that allowed Real Madrid to kind of sit back and absorb pressure.
Okay, we'll do that, and we should say that the first touch by Bellingham,
it's
to keep that alive and keep it's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, Carvajal, he just smashes one upfield. Like, it looks like he's just, there's no intent. It's not like we've got something on here, let me get this ball upfield. Like, he just kind of blasts one, and Bellingham, he's barely onside, but he holds his line. He's on his own side of the of midfield, so he's not going to be offside. And his touch is phenomenal. And even his second touch, because now, you know, his first touch settles the ball in his path.
But he's got to keep the momentum of the attack and keep the ball moving.
Right, because there's a defender immediately on him. So with the second touch, he maneuvers around that defender and gets the ball to Valverde, who does the right thing and slides it to Vinicius. And he's almost always going to do the right thing, plays it across to Rodrigo, whose first shot was terrible. He's got the whole net, and it's like he's seeking out Ederson, but he's fortunate. You know, the ball bounces right back to him, and he's not going to miss that twice.
No.
And changed everything. It did.
And it swung momentum, and in the tie, it didn't swing momentum anyway in the game, because it was City.
But it allowed Real Madrid to, I guess, change the way they were going to handle the rest of that game. Like, do you think they're playing that way if they don't have that lead to protect?
I would say it would have been a hybrid of low block. It would have been less clearly sat in, is how I would put it. It would be less clearly, we're going to try and do them again on the counter. It wouldn't be so deep.
Yeah,
I think they will be up the field a little bit more, I think.
I would tend to agree. I mean, look, they're so lethal on the counter.
The factor is that City are just, they are going to keep the ball so good, and dominate the ball so much. And teams, even the best in the world, have accepted this.
Penalties.
Yeah.
With the way it started, I mean, when Luka Modric was missing a penalty, you start to think, well, I think this one might be written in the stars here.
I think his stutter sold him. Instead of being the thing that deceives the keeper, it sold him. Like, he telegraphed it. Now, maybe it's that the older legs, having played the minutes he did going in to take the penalty first, is not good, but it gets them off to an awful start. And we know with City converting their first penalty, was it Alvarez took the penalty first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We know that percentage-wise what that does to you. Score your first penalty, what is it, in 60% of the penalty kick shootouts, you're going to go on to win. And then Modric misses that. So it's just, it needs something big. And the man to step up was the man we questioned from the first leg on the Bernardo Silva free kick. Could he have done better? Blah, blah, blah. What an excellent show of cojones from Lunin. That is big time. By the way, guys, a lot of you disappointed me greatly. That's not a Pinienka.
No.
I know, but we had listeners, and they were, oh, Andrew's got something to say about this.
No, I mean, it was a shot down the middle. There's a difference between that and a Pinienka.
Big difference, yeah.
Man, that is an intense game of chicken, to have the nerve to not move.
Oh, beautiful as well. And just to be able to bat it down, just kind of catch it like that. Perfect. Yeah. Gorgeous.
And I think he had some help. I mean, there was the clip of, it's kind of gone viral now, but Kepa facing, when Kepa was with Chelsea, facing Manchester City in a penalty shootout in the League Cup, and Bernardo Silva going right down the middle. Then it shows him whispering something to Lunin before the penalties. And then, I mean, look, Lunin is... He's only staying centrally there if he has some sort of intel that tells him. No one's gonna just do that on a whim. Clearly, something was messaged to him indicating that Bernardo Silva likes to do that. And from the video, it looks like Kepa might have been the one to pass along that message.
And that's where the multiple stops, because they are stops in the modern penalty, would have helped Bernardo, because the multiple stops are basically right at the last minute or I'm going to decide what to do. So before, with penalties, it was make a decision, go for it, don't change your mind. That's because most people didn't stutter. There was like one person in the entirety of European football stuttered. It was John Aldridge at Liverpool. And so you'd run down and you'd hit the ball, you'd make a decision. But now the stuttering allows you to make a decision. So you, because you can see your the stutter, it's designed to help you read what the goalkeeper's going to do. But in this case, there wasn't really a stutter from Bernardo Silva, and he just clips it down the center.
Yeah, rough penalty, and it obviously made things interesting. And then Mateo Kovacic with a fairly poor penalty as well. And I mean, that was essentially it. Real Madrid finished theirs out. Antonio Rudiger was the one who sealed the deal for Madrid, and they go on and they win it in penalties. I guess an interesting note, a couple interesting notes with this, you know, Pep talked about, I mean, look, if you think of City's best penalty takers, De Bruyne and Haaland will probably be the two names that you think of. Neither were available. They were both taken off. Pep said that they both asked to come out, that they were just, they had nothing left. That's tough. I mean, I can't fault them. This was a war. The amount of games that those two have played, especially, you know, De Bruyne too, who's kind of still, I think he's fit now, but you know, he's battled some muscle injuries.
I don't have the same feeling for Haaland, like asking to be taken out, as I do De Bruyne, to be honest with you.
In what way? That there's no excuse for that?
Younger and certainly not putting in the same amount of running as De Bruyne would. And not as injury prone, just not as old. So play more. Like I wonder about that one. Kovacic taking a penalty. I mean, okay. And like there was a lot of fume about Ederson taking one, but like when you see how well he took it, why wouldn't you?
I got no problem with that.
Yeah, and a bunch of Everton supporters were chiming in. Pickford would be in my first five if Everton had to take a penalty. No, Pickford's penalties are very good apparently. So there you go.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've seen that with Alyssa Nair. She's like the U.S. women's best penalty taker. So, yeah, I got no issue with that. I don't know. I don't make anything of this. Just an interesting thing. It's funny to me that when I think of like prominent PK winning sides, I often think of Croatia. They won two penalty shootouts in the 2018 World Cup. They won two penalty shootouts in the 2022 World Cup. And both of their penalty takers missed their penalties in this one, Modric and Kovacic. Now, they did lose on penalties in the UEFA Nations League final to Spain. So maybe that changed everything.
There was also a little moment in extra time where Modric is running for a ball and Gvardiol kind of gets in, takes the ball off him. Modric goes over. Oh, no.
I saw that. And he picked him up.
Modric is trying to hit a cross in and his age for once showed it was dreadful and went behind. When you expect them to deliver,
I'm
one of Real Madrid's rare sorties into the city, attacking third, and he goes over, and Gvardiol, as if it is my duty, sir.
Yes,
scoops him up like there was absolutely no question. Like the deference was quite something.
Yeah, he's a god in Croatia. What a game, and it's Real Madrid, as they have done so many times before in this competition, who find their way through. They're into the semifinals, where they will face Bayern Munich, who are also no stranger to this phase of the competition. They defeat Arsenal 1-0 on the night, 3-2 on aggregate.
Now, in the division of labor last night between the respective owners of Caught Offside LLC, I took this game because I was fascinated by it.
Yeah.
And I regretted it. For not being an Arsenal supporter, I've never willed them to do more stuff and being more disappointed by what they served up, which was nothing.
Yeah.
It was so limp. Just awful. Like I kept waiting for the onslaught, and then I look at the clock and it's like nothing. Nothing's happened. They're doing nothing. Pathetic. Yeah. It was very, very bad. Very disappointing from Arsenal. And I did not. I've been worried about their attack for a while, but I didn't expect such a complete no-show.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that, you know, I've seen a lot of people asking that question. If now is when that reared its head, that they don't have the sort of proven goal scorer that some people said they really need. And sure enough, when the summer transfer window rolls around, we'll see what their activity is. And, you know, they can say what they want now. Like I heard Mikel Arteta say afterwards, and he is right. He's like, he was asked straight out by Peter Schmeichel afterwards about not having that goal scorer. Right. And Arteta said to him, he was like, well, we've scored the most goals in England this year. And so
I know, but
there is something to be said for that.
Yeah, but
if they go out in the window and they try and they drop a ton of money on a striker, then we'll know that behind the scenes they were saying, yeah, we need one of those guys. I guess we'll find out.
There's a lot to be said for knocking the piss out of Sheffield United and Brighton at home. And like during those.
Yeah, but everybody plays those teams. They still have done it. They've still scored the most goals.
But for me, they conned me. I thought, all right, well, this is solved. Maybe they don't need that elite striker, central striker. But I would go further than that, and I would say they could have had, let's name some strikers from the Premier League that maybe could have made a run at in the summer. The aforementioned Ollie Watkins springs to mind.
I don't know. Is that real? I don't know
if that's real or what. But let's just say they had whatever name you want on it, and a marquee, like more central striker or an out-and-out goal scorer of some breed or some kind of caliber. Where was the supply to him last night? There wouldn't have been any.
Totally agree. I mean, they couldn't conjure up much in attack. Now, that's also not normal. I mean, Odegaard has been brilliant in that way. Bukayo Saka is a great creator and goal scorer. Yeah. But they just didn't have... I mean, Gabriel Martin, the first half was okay, I guess. Maybe I'm setting a low bar, but, you know, Martinelli had a good chance that was presented to him that his finish was just a little too limp and central towards Neuer. But overall, I mean, there wasn't much that they could create in this one. I guess my big thoughts about this, yes, they were not good on the night. Bayern also weren't great either. I kind of felt like,
no, they weren't.
Kind of felt a little bit in looking at how Arsenal will look back on this, kind of feel like they lost this in the first leg.
100%. 100%. And I'm wondering if the momentum, I don't want to blame Ben White because we're talking about out and out goal scorers. He ain't one. But when he's in and that opportunity and the goal is gaping, take that chance.
That's not even the one that I really think about.
Okay. What one are you thinking about?
Sorry,
I couldn't read your mind.
Well, I wasn't asking you to. I'm just saying, like, even after Ben White missed that, that was right after they scored the first goal. Then Ben White comes back with a chance right away. It's all just part of this idea that they had all the momentum. Mm. It was all pushing towards their end. It was all in their favor. And then it was their own self-inflicted, unnecessary error of Leroy Jenkins running 50 yards downfield for absolutely no reason. Like, and that, you know, and then it puts Gabriel in a tough position. And yeah, Bayern still had work to do once they got possession back, but like it didn't need to get to that point with Raya charging downfield. Like it was a self-inflicted moment. It rattled them and they weren't able to steady themselves in time. And it led to then Sané drawing a penalty. Like that all happened. It was a 9-minute window where all the stuff that Bayern needed to win this tie happened in 9 minutes. And it's like, that's, when you're playing a side like Bayern Munich, that's sometimes all it can take. You can't. It was all in Arsenal's favor. They had it, and they kind of just slipped up and gave Bayern this opportunity. And Bayern is—they're ruthless. They're going to take advantage.
It's got to annoy and irritate how the sense of swing for the fans. Like 10 days ago, you're like, well, Harry Kane's this is Arsenal fan speaking. Right. He's gone to Germany to win Bundesliga. He's not going to do that. We're not going to win the Premier League. We're not going to win we're not even in the Champions League semi-final. And Eric Dier is in the Champions League semi-final. The weirdest transfer of the year.
Crazy, right?
That's football, man. And that's that.
And he's not a passenger. Like, he couldn't crack Tottenham's bench, but he's gone to Bayern Munich. And JJ, I was looking at who scored on their Twitter site. They had the team of the quarterfinals based on their match ratings. Dier was one of the center backs of the quarterfinals, according to his match rating.
Ange Postecoglou looked at Dier and said, no, nope, no. Unbelievable.
It's wild.
Football, listen. This is the land of misfit toys. If you want to go through the semi-finalists, well, two teams in particular. We'll talk a little bit more when we talk about Borussia Dortmund. But there's some things going on, some interesting things, and again, refreshing things, I would say. And it was refreshing to see Eric Dier, you know, just kind of like, even he didn't want to be involved in Tottenham social media. He was just like, no, leave me out of it. Like, it's Just an odd.
I like that guy. I can't.
I do
help
like
it.
Him too.
I really like him. Like I think him he too. Was. I don't know. I think Tottenham fans were a little unfair to him at the end there. He's a guy that I'll always, you know, him and Kane. I mean, I love both of those guys. I wanted to ask you what you made of the way the game ended. So Arsenal. So Arsenal, they draw a foul in a really dangerous place on the field. Right as we're kind of reaching the end of the 4 minutes of added time. And instead of setting up the free kick, they take it quickly. It comes to Ben White and nearly goes in on goal, but Bayern recovered just in time. And I don't remember who it was, but it was diving in heroically to knock it out for a corner. Yeah. Saka then takes the corner. It was a terrible, all, just a
it's
dreadful.
The first defender. Oh,
so yeah. Terrible. And the whistle blows and that's it. And so I was watching, not the corner, forget that, but the quick free kick that was taken. I was wondering about that.
What would you have done?
Well, so here's why I'm torn. All season long, we have sat here and praised Arsenal as being probably the best set piece team in England. They've got this set piece coach. Look how many goals they're scoring. The percentage of goals scored is second best in the Premier League. Like, it's this thing that they've mastered. And so I'm thinking, like, I do respect the idea of trying to catch the opposition off guard, but this is it now. Your Champions League is hanging in the balance. You've prided yourself on set piece taking all season long. You're the best in Europe, arguably, and you're going to now not take the chance to work something that presumably they've practiced on the training ground many, many times. Mm-hmm. So there was that part of it that I was thinking about. But then you look a little bit deeper, and it makes me wonder, okay, there's a difference between like how good they are overall and how good they are in this moment. Arsenal overall might be a great set piece team. But JJ, I saw a stat. Yeah. So on February 24th, Arsenal had 18 set piece goals in the Premier League. Today is April 18th. They still have 18 set piece goals in the Premier League. That's according to Who Scored. So something has happened. I don't know if its teams have adjusted. Something, maybe there was always going to be a reversion to the mean. I don't know, but it feels like they haven't really, and I could be wrong. Maybe I'm missing something, another competition. Arsenal fans can check me on this. But the greater sense here is that their set piece abilities in the last month to 2 months have not been what they were earlier in the season.
Right.
And so I'm just going, I'm asking basically for you to help me here. What should they have done? Should they have relied on what they've been practicing all season long, which is playing in these set pieces that have been lethal? Or did they do the right thing to try to catch Bayern out, which they very nearly did?
I don't, you say they. I don't think that was a they decision. That
Saka
was a unilateral Saka, because I freeze framed it on Odegaard's face. Odegaard's body shape is almost, I'm on, he's setting up for like, right, we're having a conversation, we're placing the ball. We're doing this, we're doing that. And he's watching because he's almost in Saka's way.
Is this another Leroy Jenkins?
Possibly. I mean, he does see Ben White does make the run. Yeah. But like, it's not on. There's one, two, three, four. There's four Bayern defenders in advantageous positions before you get to the goalkeeper. It slides it out. Yeah. No, I don't love it. Okay. And Bayern read it. Bayern are like Johnny on the spot. They're alive to it.
It's close.
It was close. But then, if that does happen, the corner kick has got to get in under the crossbar. It's got to get in. It's got to find a head. It's got to do something. You know, for me, I mean, Raya comes up and it doesn't even clear the first defender. That is brutal. For me, I'm letting Odegaard, Saka, whoever you want, counsel over that and come up with something. Because it's so, where they get the free kick versus a corner kick, it's so much more advantageous what they started out with. And I think it's a rush of blood to the head from Saka twice. One on taking the free kick quickly, and one on the poor corner.
That's tough. That's tough. So City and Arsenal both exit Europe. We'll find out what happens with Liverpool later today. We're recording this before their game, but they're in a bit of a hole. Now they've climbed out of them before, but yeah.
Well, the problem
my guess is they're not gonna.
Well, I'm gonna go to Monroe to watch it after we record.
Okay.
I should make one comment about them climbing out of the hole. Climbing out of the hole is fine in like 2019 when your attack is absolutely zipping along. Even though there were players missing from that, obviously Salah didn't start from that remontada.
Origi
was in fine form. There was, you know, Barca were chaotic. I would say Atlanta are more although they're not going great in Serie A, I'd say they're more disciplined and more together under Gasperini than Barcelona were under Valverde at that moment in time. We don't, like, Liverpool's attack suddenly has to click into gear for this one to come about. Can it happen? Sure. Will Atalanta give you the opportunities? Possibly.
Probably not worth breaking down too in-depthly, considering it will have happened by the time anyone's listening to this.
You know what? I'll tweet out about it later.
All right. I respect
hopefully
that.
Hopefully in a happy mood. What's up next, Andrew?
So, well, I just wanted to ask you, does this City, Arsenal, like these teams losing in pretty devastating fashion, does this do anything in terms of its impact on the title race, or is it kind of just on, you know, okay, let's focus on this thing now?
So for, I'll just say, for Liverpool fans yesterday, they wanted both sides to go through because they'd still be occupied in Europe. And that there was a sense that that might help a slip up by City and by Arsenal. I don't know if I agree with that or not. Hard to say, but I would have been rooting for, like, if I had my Liverpool hat on and not my podcast hat on, right, I would have been rooting for that. Does it? I don't think it affects City. I actually don't think it'll affect City in the same way, because I think there might, I think there's something fundamentally petering out about Arsenal. In the same way, I think there's something fundamentally petering out about Liverpool. I better say that, because amazing, I have to say that, because, well, there was a guy, just quick one there, Andrew, last night. So I tweeted out, I thought it was funny. I wasn't slagging off Arsenal. Like I said, I would have been as happy if they knocked Bayern Munich out and went on to the semi-final. That would have done me just fine in that tie. No problems. No problems. Wasn't rooting against them. But there's a picture from his West Ham days. It's a kit launch of it's a gif of Declan Rice dancing and going like this and just vibing and everything. And someone's written above it, Decky dancing on the corner while Kimmich comes in behind him to power the header home. Now, in fairness, Declan Rice was in the box, not doing very much of anything. I don't know if he could have affected that because he's facing the goal. Kimmich is making a run from deep. I think there should have been someone tracking. Okay, so I don't know if I blame Decky, but I just said second time in a week as well, because I felt he was at fault at the back post for the Bailey goal. I don't think he was aware. He's like an innocent bystander. So I tweeted that out. And this guy that's been following us for a while, should I name him? We'll just call him Colby, because I don't want to pile on the poor fella, because he's clearly, you know what? He's upset.
He's hurting right now. Yeah.
Yeah, he's hurting. And he tweets back at me, you're a really sad man. And I thought.
He may not be wrong there, but.
But sad for different reasons, not for this. So I replied, Colby, I'm really not that sad. And then he writes, you fooled me. And I said, all right, well, that's something I can't help you with. Unfollow.
Oh.
I'd say this guy's been following me for maybe 10 years. I mean, 8 years anyway, definitely.
How do you know he unfollowed you?
Oh, I went and checked because I knew he would. I just knew he would.
Oh, wow. Look at
and
you.
By the way, this guy's he's the founding editor of a pretty good, like a kind of an aggregate, political aggregate website. Or that's what I knew them for. They'd aggregate videos and stuff from media about politics. Founding editor, I thought a guy in the media would have a bit of, I suppose, a bit more
sports or tribal.
Yeah, a bit tougher than that. Go. Unfollowed, Jesus, like,
yeah.
I mean,
it seems a little bit harsh.
Well, you caught him
on a bad moment. They just lost. They got knocked out of a Champions League quarterfinal.
Yeah, but I've called followers, like people, like Chelsea fans, like I've called them Tories. I called one guy a face once.
Why do you have to be like this? Can't you bring people in as opposed to repelling people?
No, but they still followed me because they know who I am. I just assumed maybe this guy doesn't listen to the pod anymore and just kept following me. In which case, probably a wise move.
Sad. But like, sad, I wasn't sad, man.
I know. We just got to come on. You got to be tougher.
It's a busy week for Arsenal. I mean, they got to figure it out quick because they go to Wolves this weekend on Saturday. Then they're home against Chelsea on Tuesday. And then they finish out the week.
The last team you want to be going to is Wolves, isn't it?
I mean.
One of the last teams.
I think there's maybe a couple others that I would suggest, but sure. And then they end the week at Spurs. Hey. So you can't hang your heads for long. City, meanwhile, have their FA Cup semifinal this weekend against Chelsea. So still a lot. I mean, these seasons are... Their cup run is over here in the Champions League, but their seasons are very much not. They gotta figure it out quick. Let's continue here, JJ. Barcelona, maybe similar to Arsenal in the first leg. Barcelona in the second leg had it in control I mean, it was there for them, and then suddenly it was gone. They got the early goal. Vibes were good.
Yeah.
And everything changed with Ronald Araujo's light foul, but probably still a foul.
I think it's a foul.
Bradley Barcola.
I think it's a foul, very much so. And there was a little bit of shirt grab, bottom of shirt grab as well. I think it's a foul. So, just a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. Can I count this as a
remontada?
I mean, a remontada, to be down. So you're basically asking me, being down two goals early on aggregate in the second leg, that's the bar for what qualifies as a remontada.
I mean, the commentary team on CBS at the end called it a remontada for PSG. I think this is the third remontada in, what, 5-6 years for Barcelona. And I wonder how many remontadas you can be on the end of before your club just decides.
Can at least one of them be nullified by what they did to PSG back in 2017?
That's a good point.
I mean, that might have been the most ridiculous of them all.
It's like they started the remontada and then immediately, aggressively, they're the Winklevoss brothers, and aggressively it's taken away from them, the copyright of the remontada. Now they're only remembered as being on the end of the remontada.
But there's a great settlement headed their way.
Oh, they wish. They absolutely wish. I have. I mean, maybe it's not for me to say, but İlkay Gündoğan said, pretty much, I'll paraphrase, yeah, we had this and we gave it away. And it's hard to get away from that feeling. They were at home. But like I said, and like you kind of poo-pooed me last week, PSG weren't out of that. Like, PSG could have been coming into this leg ahead. The Vitinha chance last week, they had two chances towards the end of the game before the Christensen header. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm putting it down as a remontada.
Okay.
First remontada, to give them their credit, was the Neymar and Messi against PSG. Second remontada happened to them. That's Roma, the comeback against Roma. And then in 17-18, and then 18-19 remontada, the famous against Liverpool. And now this is the next one.
I guess this one. So it's kind of, it's close. It's close. But
the minute you heard that CBS said it was a remontada, you're like, oh, well, maybe it is. But for
no,
me,
no,
to
no.
Say it, you know, you don't value me.
No, I'm not sure. It's two. I don't know if two goals is quite enough for that to be the peak of what your deficit was.
But I guess in the game state.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, the game state was Barcelona went down to 10 men and they couldn't handle that. Although we can get into it, but some of what happened, I mean, look, being down a man is going to change the complexion of a game.
For sure.
But then there are also mistakes that happen within that I don't know if they're necessarily because you're down to 10 men. Like, there's no need to dance around it. João Cancelo's penalty. Like, I don't know if that's because you're down a man.
No.
That a player makes
terrible.
A decision like that.
What were you thinking when you saw that?
That's the stuff that frustrates me so much. Like, if I were a coach, that I don't know how I would handle stuff like that. It's just not necessary.
No.
Let's say Ousmane Dembele gets to that ball. Where's he going? He's lunging, so he's not. It's not like he's in a position where he's charging towards goal. He's lunging towards the end line.
Yes,
he's got it. He's basically on the ground. Like, if he gets to it, so what? Stand up. Yep. Stand your ground, be in front of him. There's what are you trying to do there? And look, I got to say, Thierry Henry, we say this all the time. Probably sounds like we're kissing his A, but like, he's so good on CBS. And his analysis of this I thought was so interesting because, you know, he said you can't really, that's the stuff, like, you can't really coach that into a player. In a moment like that, where a split decision has to be made and it's just pure reaction, like, a guy is kind of just going to do what he's going to do. And Cancelo just made a decision to lunge also for the ball. It's close. When I saw it in real time, I was like, oh, are we sure that's a penalty? It's close enough. And I have a hard time giving the benefit of the doubt to a guy who's defending and kind of doing so a little bit recklessly. I don't have a problem with it being a penalty. And it's just, I don't know. It's a poor decision. Cancelo he can be a great player in attack going forward, but there's enough questions about him defensively that you can always wonder what his ceiling is as an overall player. And a moment like that, it reared its head at a horrible time. That was felt like the tie right there. He kind of gave it away.
Can I ask you, because you're more of a Barca guy than I am. Did it have to be Yamal that comes off?
Oh,
did it have to be him?
I purposely emailed myself this tweet that I saw during, I think it was during the game, to credit him, that Hercules Gomez sent. He said, "I wouldn't have taken off Yamal if I were Xavi. Such an honest player on the defensive side and gives you plenty going forward in transition and one versus one opportunities. I would have taken off Lewandowski," is what he said.
Oh, yeah, I would too.
I thought that, I mean, I don't know. I'd have to go back and see who else was out there.
Why are you taking legs out of your side?
Look at the goal that they scored. Like, Yamal on the end line just toasts his man, goes around him and sets up Rafinha for a tap in. I mean, I wouldn't have done it either.
I think that's an awful decision.
I think that's
a decision where you fundamentally wonder what's going on with the manager if he's doing that. By the way, the manager gets sent off himself.
I mean, you can't do what he did there. You can't kick the hell out of the padding or whatever it is.
He's got a lot of blame to shoulder himself, and he's destroyed this kind of fairy tale ending. Imagine he's the one that delivers the Champions League. I'm not saying he would have. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that would have been...
You would have picked him to get to the final, at least.
You would have. Not for me. This is just poor management. Leave the legs in the side. Leave your player that can beat a guy, your attacking outlet, who can put... If you're saying, well, on the other end, Mbappe can put you on toast, he's their guy that can put you on toast. You're limiting yourself straight away. Is there not a world where you can slide, you can take out, like, say, I wouldn't want to take Pedri out, but you can take Lewandowski out, right? And you can bring on who did he bring on? Inigo Martinez.
Yeah.
And kind of rejig it, maybe go to a back three or something. Don't do that. It seems unnecessary.
I wouldn't have done it either. I didn't like that either.
Or stay with a back four. What am I saying? You could have stayed with a back four if you lose Lewandowski
number nine.
Cancelo can play in the center, can't he? Slide him into the center.
Well, that might have changed everything. Maybe there would be no penalty.
There might have been more penalties given. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that too. I don't know. This whole Xavi, this is a tough exit for him. I mean, look, they got a Clasico this weekend, so they're 8 points back of Real Madrid. I see that league as over. But if Barcelona win that game down to 5 points, we can have a conversation. I still don't think that they're going to turn it around. I think that this was kind of his exit from, this sort of was serving as his goodbye from Barcelona. And it's a tough one for him to be sent off, for them to concede the goals the way that they did. But it's weird because, I don't know, I feel like there's still this pull out there of people being like, well, maybe he'll reconsider. I don't think he's going to manage them next season, but it just seems like there's too many people still within Barcelona as an organization that love him, that I feel like this won't be the last time he manages Barcelona altogether.
Really?
I still think that. I think it's maybe... This was a lot for him to handle right out of the gate, going from managing in, where was he, Qatar, and then coming to Barcelona. They won the league, but he felt like maybe he wasn't getting the flowers he thought he was going to get because they went out in the Champions League. They weren't necessarily playing the patented Barcelona style. Maybe a lot of this was jarring to him, some of the, the way he was received. Once the dust settles from that, he has a year off. He kind of knows the deal now a little bit of how, I don't know. I feel like there's still too many people there. Laporta, it seems like, wants him to come back. Like, Xavi's leaving because he wants him to leave. All because of the Yamal decision?
I think it's
that egregious that is it a fireable offense? I don't know.
Oh, it's a shocker. Absolute shocker.
on the PSG side of it, you can only, I guess, keep Mbappe down for so long. Now, he was not amazing in this game, at least early on. He had an early chance where it forced a great save out of Ter Stegen.
Yeah.
Obviously, he converted the penalty, and then, of course, he converted at the very end on the counterattack as Barcelona were trying to press men forward to try to get something out of this, to try to grab that goal to tie it. There was so much space in the back, and PSG, I mean, what was it? It was like the third chance in that phase of play where finally Mbappe finished him off with the goal. So he does exit this one with two goals after a silent first leg. He still finds a way to leave his mark, as the great ones do. You know, even when they maybe don't have it the way that you expect them to, they still find a way. Not such a terrible thing to not have it to the tune of two goals in a second leg against Barcelona on the road. Although he's not even really like, yeah, two goals is great. I thought Ousmane Dembele was just enormous for PSG, scoring the first goal, drew the penalty. Again,
Vitinha's goal for me.
Yeah.
He's emerged. Like, I clearly haven't been paying that much attention, but I've loved him over the two legs of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite stat, I guess, from this Champions League quarterfinal stage, that Ousmane Dembele has three goals this entire season, and two of them just happened in the last week against his former club.
I've been completely confused. This is Rio Ferdinand's take on the Yamal substitution. The manager has got to make changes, and he has sacrificed the youngest, most inexperienced player on the pitch, an attacking player, to shore things up defensively. It's understandable. Not nice for a young player, but it's part of his learning curve. What learning curve? What's he talking about? Peter Crouch said it's a huge loss because he was sometimes switching to deal with Mbappe. He was going right in just to follow Mbappe. It's going to be a big miss for them. You miss him defensively because he can go past people and he's a good carry of the ball. The sending off is a huge impact. What am I missing here? Like, I watch so much football. I must be missing something here. I think this is...
I do not buy that idea that you take him off because he's the youngest player. I mean, I'm taking a little bit of what Ferdinand said there out of context, but I mean...
Are you taking Michael Owen off against Argentina when Beckham gets sent off? Sure things up.
Like, this guy, he's fine. He's 16 years old. We all know that. But, like, let's just call it what it is. This kid ain't a rookie anymore.
No.
Like, he's starting every game in the Champions League. He's starting every week for them pretty much in La Liga. Like,
if he's old enough to start, he's old enough to stay on.
Yeah, I don't. His age is not a reason.
Honestly, look what he did for the first goal, and that's it. There's your evidence.
If there's something strategic, and maybe by now Xavi has addressed it, I'm guessing he would have been asked about that. Maybe during the break we'll look up and see what he said. But age, I don't know. I don't see that. Wouldn't be my reason. And then finally, JJ, maybe the most exciting game of them all.
Now we're talking.
Borussia Dortmund and Atletico Madrid. What a game. What a game. Back and forth. And in the end, it's Borussia Dortmund at home who take it away from Atletico Madrid, something you don't see very often. When Atletico have a lead, I don't know, it's kind of something you ingrained within them that you just feel like they'll find a way to see it out. And that was not the case. Yeah, not the case, certainly here. The Westfalenstadion. I'm not sure that there are too many stadiums that I would choose over that one as a neutral fan to take in a big game.
Can we just go there? Go for a game.
I would say record
a podcast. Let's do a weekend in Germany. Go on the Wednesday, get Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We'll try and get training on the Thursday. Record some content. Go to a game, record a podcast after it. Let's do it.
Just that mass of humanity.
No, I need you to commit to this plan.
Oh. So you mean we can't talk? We can't continue talking. I have to. Like, you want me to sign some documents or
no? Well, we
have my lawyer here.
Hey, we've got contacts. I'm sure we have listeners that could help facilitate this. We should do it because it is the roar that goes up when they score their opener. Brandt scores that opener. By the way, what a ball by Hummels.
Yeah, I know. Outside of the boot.
Yeah, no, just right before that. So, like, it seemed to be the game was kind of trying to settle into a pattern So there was an early chance for Sabitzer, who's my man of the match, by the way.
Oh, has to be.
So I'll get back to Sabitzer because he's one of the island of misfit toys. Early chance for Sabitzer. Then there's Morata, who, if I want to sum up a career, I would maybe sum it up in just that. Oh. Racing away. Oh, that looks like a good finish. No, it's past the post. It's wide. And so, but then the game settles into what I think Atleti fans will be frustrated with. The low block, they sit in, they invite Borussia Dortmund on to break them down, and Borussia Dortmund break them down twice. First, outside of the boot to Hummels for Sabitzer, and it's right at the end of the first half, so it's like a double blow. Outside of the boot, Brandt, okay, I don't think Oblak had a great night. Maybe he could have done more, but it's low to him. It flies into the net. And at this point, Atleti are pinned in. And then Madsen with a great, great finish, driven low into the bottom corner after a reverse or a semi-reverse pass by Sabitzer to set him up, just drills them home, and then they're ahead in the tie. And the place is going absolutely rocking going into halftime. Incredible. Like, just incredible. And you think, is it done? But it's not done.
No, it's very much not. Simeone made a couple big changes at the half, brought on Correa and Riquelme, both of which I thought worked.
Correa.
Quickly, ooh. You know, you got the Hummels own goal. Boy, he had these were a weird couple games for him. I mean, like you said, he made the good pass to set up Brandt's goal. But in the first leg, he had some terrible moments. And then this own goal, it's not great.
They're weird. Like, I don't like Schlotterbeck and Hummels. Do I feel... Hang on. Do I feel always comfortable? Do I think they're always solid?
No.
No. But do I kind of like them a lot? There's something about them. They have maybe not the greatest central defensive partnership ever in the world, but they have some kind of charisma going on here.
Yeah. And then, Correa, shortly after that, scoring on a rebound where he volleys it out of the air into the top netting. It was really kind of a cool goal.
It was a very cool finish. But right before that, that ball that's played in, I don't know who played the pass, but again, somehow Schlotterbeck and Hummels are separated and Correa gets in between them and he's off to the races and he slides it past the post. Correa's had, I know he scored and it's a brilliant goal, but he had two massive chances across the two legs that he missed. And somehow it's Lino that gets the blame from Simeone afterwards. He goes, well, if Lino scores that at the Wanda, then it's over. Which is, we know that chance was huge. Uh-huh. And a big save from Kobel. But hang on, Correa, what about him?
Yeah, the Lino one, I mean, when we talked about that, I almost didn't even blame him.
You just thought it was a great save.
It was unbelievable. Like, what else? I don't know what Lino... You just kind of hit that. Like, it's not like he aimed at the keeper. The keeper dove out of nowhere to block it. I don't know. That's a tough one to take. So Atletico Madrid, it shifts back into their favor. And then Borussia Dortmund, to be on Twitter, I follow some Borussia Dortmund people. And I get why they'd be down. They're still kind of living in the shadow of the disastrous final day of last year's Bundesliga season, where they're sort of just like waiting for something bad to happen. Yep. It's sort of the how this era is defined for them. But this day was different. You get the ball played in as Niklas Füllkrug is flashing across the face of goal. His header is perfect into the top corner. What a great header.
It's a goal straight out of 1993. You got your big man striker. And it's Sabitzer with the cross. Listen to Jonathan Pierce's call, though. This is the goal, the goal that puts Dortmund back ahead in the tie. And this is how he calls it. I'm curious for your thoughts.
Sabitzer with a cross into the middle. And how about this? Unfashionable. Niklas Füllkrug puts Borussia Dortmund ahead on the night. And the tie stands level at 4-4.
What does he mean? Why? What does he mean unfashionable?
Because it's not fashionable to have Füllkrug, that big kind of lumbering center forward, in your side. But did he have to say it then? Why not just go, oh, Füllkrug? wait, crowd noise. And Borussia Dortmund are ahead in the tie.
Is he suggesting that Füllkrug is like having, is he like Wout Weghorst? Is it like,
a
is
little
it like
bit.
That? Like,
I mean, we've talked about Füllkrug before in terms of Germany. You know, when Germany are going through their bad World Cup in Qatar, what are we saying about Füllkrug? He's a byword for like what this German, like he doesn't work. Like mentally for us, he doesn't work. He's 31. He's like what? 6'2". He just feels like a throwback kind of striker. But there was no need to say that in that moment. I know it's a perfect kind of juncture to kind of discuss. We had, now I'll try and find it. And if I can't find it, it doesn't matter because I can paraphrase it. But we had a contribution from a Reddit where a listener, here we go. Perfect. So it makes the mailbag. It makes the main portion of the pod. BVB mailbag. What a roller coaster of emotions. I've posted an email before, but I'm one of a few Dortmund fans that loves the pod. With last year's total heartbreak, it has been a hard up and down season, but I always stick to Schwarz-Gelben. Today, they brought a moment of pure football and fandom joy. I haven't felt this level of happiness since the Klopp run to the final. Whatever happens from here, we have showed some grit that this team has been missing then. What a ragtag team of aging stars, mid-table pickups, and budding youth talent. It really is a team and a story to root for. And it is like, look at the defense. Like Mats Hummels, like, I mean, is it over for Hummels? No, he's 35. He's, you know, he's been a very good defender. He was at Borussia Dortmund. He went away. He came back. Look at Emre Can. Can is a center midfielder for a Champions League semi-final team. A player that when he was at Liverpool, nah. Klopp saw enough, moved him on. Sabitzer. Like last night, Sabitzer scored a goal himself, the final goal, and he had two assists. A cross and a reverse pass in the Champions League. Do you remember him at United? He looked dog. He looked washed. He looked finished. Jadon Sancho. Again, I'm not saying he's back to full Sancho, but he's on his way to a Champions League semi-final. Something he couldn't achieve at Manchester United and basically had become an outcast at the club. Julian Brandt. Julian Brandt is one of those players where you're like, oh, he's going to get a big move soon. He's 27. He's 27. And you can say it's never fully happened for him. But I think he's been awesome for them. And then you round it off with like Füllkrug. Well, you don't round it off with Füllkrug. Is like, there's no team in England going, we need Füllkrug in. Let's get Füllkrug in. There's no top club in any other league that's looking for this guy. But here he is. And I'm not even finished there. Marco Reus, 34 years of age. I know he's not guaranteed to start all the time. But like one of he's been linked with Liverpool, City, how many players over the last 15 years? Injury has derailed him so many times. But he's a fantastic footballer. Like he's a lovely footballer. And he's into a Champions League semi-final. It's a great story for a great club and a club that's had to be a selling club to keep at this level. They're fantastic. They really are, and I'm delighted for them.
It is a cool story, and it is so much of it does fly in the face of what we think of Borussia Dortmund to be. Now, I'm not saying they're not playing young players like Adeyemi. There are young players out there, but
of course there is.
But like you're right, though. I mean, this like ragtag group of aging vets is a little bit unusual, sort of to like the ethos of what that club is. I just want to kind of round it out on Sabitzer, who put in a man of the match performance.
Come on.
And I love, you know, we're talking about kind of the weirdness of Borussia Dortmund. It's all sort of personified in that guy. This description from Jonathan Liu on Marcel Sabitzer's night, written in The Guardian, is so good. He writes, Sabitzer was key to the chaos. Indeed, a cursory glance at his CV, Dortmund, two Red Bull clubs, Manchester United, reveals a player who has basically earned a PhD in chaos, a central midfielder who actually does very few of the things you would expect from a central midfielder. He only completed 17 passes all night. He did not attempt a tackle or win a header. but somehow he was still everywhere, aggressively pressing the goalkeeper, roaming left and right, sniffing out the space, a kind of midfielder without portfolio. Crazy night. A player of chaos who doesn't do what he's maybe supposed to do, but finds ways to do other things to still be hugely effective. It was wild.
And look at Mattsson as well. Mattsson, who had the, I don't blame him entirely, but who had a big brain fart in the first leg, where he's just decided, I'll play a little round the corner pass in front of my own goal. I'll just do that with Antoine Griezmann sniffing around me. Drills one into the bottom corner to give them their first lead that they had on the night. Yeah, sometimes it's just like football is great. Oh, football is great.
Bloody hell.
And I'm more of the opinion now that shapeless, not shapeless, that's not, because all football has some structure on it, but fluid vibes FC football is what I want. That's what I want. Because this, it throws up stuff like this.
Yeah, it does. Let's just finish it out now with a couple final thoughts on what was a thrilling quarterfinal stage, as we've talked about. Winner, loser, other thoughts. I guess, so my big winner, just to throw this out there, the people. Like, this, not only were these games dramatic, but 32 goals were scored in this quarterfinal stage of the competition. That, not surprisingly, is a record. Maybe this was an instance where getting rid of the away goals rule helped in some weird way.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of times where away goals brain was still turned on in me, and I'm like,
you gotta shut that off.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that changes the tie. No, it still doesn't. They can still get back into it. So in a sense, this was a good one for those who believe that away goals needed to be removed.
Yeah, the big loser here, England. I mean, they have nobody in the semifinals, like you talked about, of the Champions League.
England is a concept, Andrew. England doesn't actually exist.
The English coefficient. In coefficient watch, England was a huge loser. The Premier League was a huge loser here.
What was it, though?
Well, if you're a fan of a certain club that resides in North London, it was. Now, I'm not saying I wasn't weirdly... Well, I don't need to go deeply into how I was rooting. You might be able to guess. But according to Opta, the chances now of Germany locking up that... Italy are home free. They've got the extra Champions League place. It was Germany and England battling it out for that second spot. And it was tight. England had gotten front and Germany kind of was jockeying. And now it's over pretty much. Germany, their chances are now 93.4% of landing that second spot. So, and it's interesting because it's Borussia Dortmund who helped themselves and RB Leipzig. But like with regards to Dortmund, if they win the Champions League, obviously they'll qualify for next year's competition. That's still a tall order, even though they're in the final four. If they don't, it looks like they're going to qualify anyway because they're fifth right now in the Bundesliga. So, I mean, they really helped themselves by getting through. They're tied on points in the league with RB Leipzig for fourth and fifth. Leipzig ahead on goal difference. And they both got a 14-point lead over sixth place on track Frankfurt. So it looks like it's going to – whoever – between Leipzig and Dortmund, whoever finishes fifth, it looks like they're in good shape to land that extra spot. That's an interesting thing, JJ. There's 18 teams in the Bundesliga. Yeah. Five of them are likely going to be competing in the Champions League next year.
Well, I think they did fine. I'm okay with that.
I think there needs to be an investigation.
Of course. Adam Crafton had this tweet. There was also something mildly weird and pathetic about being able to finish fifth and relying on your domestic rivals succeeding to nick a place in the premium tournament anyway. I couldn't agree more with that.
And in fairness, I don't know many Tottenham fans that were rooting for Arsenal.
That really
by, and by many, I don't. I mean any. I don't know any... that we're rooting for Arsenal, even with the knowledge that an Arsenal win would in some way help Tottenham. I think that the rivalry superseded the value of the coefficient in this case. And to be perfectly frank, that was how I felt as well. And it didn't hurt that two guys who I love and Harry Kane and Eric Dier were playing for Bayern Munich as well. That certainly helped a little bit. the final piece here, JJ, we'll have time to preview the semifinals, but just I just want to ask the initial question, because I'm always curious how people will see this. Of the four remaining clubs, who do you think has the most pressure on them to go and do this now?
Personally, I think it's Paris Saint-Germain. It's suddenly become them, because they'll be favored against Dortmund, I believe. And here's the opportunity to deliver for Nasser Al-Khelaifi. By the way, how many times do you have to pan to this guy in the stands during a game and to see his expressionless face as his club do amazing things on the field? How many times?
I need three. I need a solid three.
You know what? There was a lot said, oh, it's sexist to pan to attractive women in the stands. Give me that any day over this guy who represents everything that creeps me out about modern football. Yuck. Stop doing it.
Well, you are really a monster.
I am a monster.
I agree. PSG is my answer as well. And then not just for the reasons that you said there about who their opposition is. Like, how it has opened up for them. But like, look, as long as that guy that you just mentioned there owns this team, they're going to be good. They're going to continue to be good. But there's a, like, Mbappe's the best player in the world. He's leaving in the summer. There's a little bit of a last dance feel here. You know, he's not going to be easy to replace, that guy. So you got Dortmund, Mbappe's last year with the club. Can't squander this. They've got to do this now. So they would be mine. Second for me is Bayern Munich. Like, they've been mocked and berated by the neutrals for 5 months now.
They have a manager the supporters can't wait to get rid of. And yet, is this dude on his way to his second Champions League final? Our second Champions League win as a kind of a, I suppose the difference with him at Chelsea. So he comes in, replaces Frank Lampard, who was way out of his depth, and then just drives them on to a Champions League victory.
But he did it a certain way.
He did do it a certain way. But it was pretty much bad after that. So
this man was born for tournament football.
Oh, definitely.
He should be, if something goes awry this summer with Triple G.
Oh, I don't know, man.
I'll just end that sentence there, and you can all do with it what you want. This man was born for tournament football.
Oh, Tactical Andrew with the tweet. It's amazing. Like, the mess that Bayern are in on and off the field, and look what's about to happen.
They could still end this year. I mean, Leverkusen are still the story of the season.
I ain't betting against Real Madrid right now, though.
I mean, they would be my choice as well. Yeah, I don't know. This is Real Madrid is my pick. But by the way, what does it say like about going into a Champions League semifinal, and we can name multiple teams with more pressure on them than Real Madrid? Right, Real Madrid can't walk down the street without feeling pressure.
Like, I guess there is pressure on Madrid as well, because now we've started this whole thing where it's because they're Real Madrid, because of their history, that they just seem to get through in these games. They seem to always be alive because the competition is their competition in a way.
Yeah.
So I was reminded of, quickly, a quick one, I promise, because we've got other stuff to get to.
Yeah.
But a quick one. So there used to be a psychic on TV called Derek Acora, and he used to talk to ghosts, Andrew, right? He'd come in, and his big thing was he'd come into an old... it was called Ghost Hunters. And it was big on like Bravo and those channels. He made a lot of money out of it. And you could hire him privately. Like, he'd go, Andrew, I need to sit you down there. Andrew, you're surrounded by people. You're surrounded by ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, there's something coming to my mind, please. Do you know a man called Frankie? Frankie, Andrew, please. Hello, Frankie. Oh, Frankie says stop. You know, this kind of stuff. Talking to the undead, right?
Thank you, yeah.
But a lot of what he did was...
JJ Performance Theater here.
Where he would go into like a room of an old house that someone would say, oh, we will, you know, the chairs have been moving and that statue's been crying, what's going on? And he'd walk into the room, right? And he'd go, yeah. Oh, strong. Lot of history here. Yeah, it's an old house. What do you expect? A lot of residual energies. So he came up with this idea of residual energy, that if you live, or enough generations of people have lived in a house, they leave their energy behind them. Like, is, I don't know. It's like Real Madrid live on residual energy. Like, everything they've done before piles up and drives them on to victory in games. So
but
I think,
like, look, I'm kind of with you, but there is, in this sport, I guess in a lot of sports, but in this sport, it feels like there is this, the history of the Tottenham, the history of the Munich, the history of the Real Madrid, like it seems to be more
European nights in Liverpool.
It's more pervasive in this sport, I feel like, than any other. And like they were talking about it a lot on the CBS postgame show.
Yeah.
Where it's just like this fact that like, oh, well, like Real Madrid, you know, Bayern Munich, these teams just know how to do it. It's just funny to me that like something that happened 40 years ago has some bearing on what these teams are doing today. The residual energy, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I'm talking to someone, good. Please. I'm talking to someone. Is there a Steve McManaman? A Steve McManaman scored against Valencia. He's scoring a goal. He's telling you you're going to win the championship. Like, I don't know. Residual energy.
Anyway. Residual energy. JJ, this is this quarterfinal stage was insanity. So insane, in fact, that it took us almost an hour and 20 minutes to get through it.
Don't care.
I care don't about everything. Care. I care about everything and everyone.
Got a nice little mailbag now.
Yep. So we're going to go ahead. We'll take a break. Come back on the other side. We've got a mailbag and something that happened, a little bit of a development in England earlier today with regards to the FA Cup. So we'll talk about that as well. Still more Caught Offside. Don't go anywhere.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. Still recovering from the quarterfinal stage of the Champions League. But JJ, that takes us, we'll do a mailbag in a sec, but want to mention something about the FA Cup. So it was announced earlier today, Thursday morning, that moving forward, there will no longer be replays in the FA Cup. If it is tied after 90 minutes, extra time, penalties, someone wins, someone loses.
Yeah, and it's been met with the traditionalists. A lot of lower league clubs have met this decision with disappointment and some derision. My instinct was that it's bad. Replays we've been led to believe are a lifeblood source of money for smaller clubs. But if you have a replay between, like, say, Wrexham and Scunthorpe, is that really that much more money for Scunny or for Wrexham? I don't know. But if there's a replay between Wrexham and Manchester United, then that is a lot of money that goes to Wrexham for sure. And I still think there's room for it. There was an argument that as well that I saw on Twitter, because this is just breaking news, so I'm trying to get a thought on this.
But the PFM in you wants to hate it.
PFM in me wants to hate it. There's an argument from the Premier League. I can't remember who tweeted it, but he said, if you're outside the top seven or eight teams, if you're not in like Conference League or whatever, you're not getting enough games anyway as a Premier League team. So what's a replay to Fulham? Like, what's a replay to Crystal Palace? They should be playing in replays. They don't play that many games if you're not in that. So it's more games. That's an additional game. That's a good thing. But then again, they'll argue, well, you know, the finish in the Premier League, the money you get from that's more important. We'd like to rest our resources, whatever. And then Dale Johnson had a thread where he goes, I know I'm going against the grain here, but I'm paraphrasing.
I have it all written, actually, because I thought it was interesting. You want me to read it?
Yeah, but don't read all of it, because your voice was pretty interesting. Quite monotone and boring.
He said, FA Cup replays are outdated. And let's also remember the chances of any small club getting a money spinning FA Cup replay are so ridiculously minuscule. He said, I'd hazard a guess that a lot of clubs probably lose money on FA Cup replays. Played midweek with small attendances and quick turnarounds in organization. I reckon in the vast majority of cases, FA Cup replays will not be missed. And perhaps a small club would have a better chance of getting through on penalties first time than a replay. More prize money, another round in the cup, and possibility of a home game, TV coverage, coin. He went on even deeper to say that he thinks they should get rid of extra time altogether in this competition like they did in the Carabao Cup and go straight to penalties. It is an interesting point. You know, everybody's kind of looking out for the minnows here. But he is probably right. A game going to penalties as opposed to a replay where they got to do it again over the course of 90 minutes, their chances of winning, I would think, are far greater in a penalty shootout than they would be having to play him again in a 90-minute match.
Don't forget that the lure of the FA Cup is built on a lot of replays. Some of them are replays that did not involve big teams, though. So we'll take, like, for example, the semi-final in 99, Arsenal versus Manchester United. That second replay game goes into lore with the Giggs goal and the whole thing. So
yeah,
I mean, so much of English life is built on the past. So much of English consciousness is, and there's nothing more English than the FA Cup. English and Welsh. You get what I'm coming at. So the traditionalists will rail against this. They won't like this, but there may be some sense to it. As much as I don't feel like I love it, but I'm very conscious now that people see me as this.
As what you are.
Totem pole for the PFM, like a wooden Sam Allardyce.
Yeah, I'm not. I would say I find this interesting, but I'm not really moved by it.
Not a lot moves you, though. Let's be honest.
That's not true. I'll tell you something that moved me. Let's go to the mailbag, JJ. This comes from at Burner J. Said, I would like to request a brief rundown of the Chelsea penalty incident. So we recorded on Monday morning. Chelsea played Everton that afternoon and beat the living hell out of them. 6-0.
Not out of them.
I mean, by the way, like, I know that the penalty incident has taken on a life of its own, and I do understand why, and we're going to talk about it in a sec. But I do want, like, let's not bury the lead here. It's a hell of a performance from Chelsea and an embarrassment from Everton. And Cole Palmer is ridiculous. I mean, he's just been in scorching hot form, and Chelsea, England, whatever, they got something here. I mean, this guy is the real deal. He's fantastic.
You hate him, though.
I look forward to hating him for many years. I can just I see that in our future. Yeah. And so with that, I guess we will go into the penalty incident. JJ, I'm gonna sound the what I'd like to deem the bad opinion klaxon. Let's sound the bad opinion klaxon here. Yep, there it goes.
Oh, that's jarring.
Yeah, that's Why? The bad a bad opinion, everybody. A bad opinion is on its way because I have seen social media. I have seen the way the public is going on this, and I have heard what Maurizio Pochettino said, a man who I have a ton of time for and huge respect for, the captain, Conor Gallagher. I saw he was the adult in the room when this incident happened. He made sure that Palmer took the penalty. Mm-hmm. So I know I am alone here, and I know that it's a bad opinion. When I see enough people the other way, I understand
you're a man of consensus always.
Oh, I am terrified of being alone in any form, whether it's physically or mentally or in an opinion such as this one. But I can't help it. I watched this go down, and before I read anything on Twitter, just the way I was feeling, I was kind of like, it's 4-0 in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a hat trick. Like, these guys, you know, however embarrassing it was to kind of watch Jackson and Madueke do this, they've been maligned all season. Like, you, Cole Palmer, like I just said, you're the golden boy of
you're
this
getting
team.
Your flowers. You're going to be week out.
You're the player of the season. Like, nothing's changing that. You've already got a hat trick in this game. Would it kill you? And maybe it ticks your manager off a little bit because, you know, Pochettino made it clear afterwards, he takes the penalties. That's our penalty taker. Maybe that happens. But look, he's going to love you because you're the best thing on that team right now. And you know what? Maybe it wins you some respect from guys in that room that you kind of reached out and did that. Now, look, if I come to find out later, and Chelsea fans, I'm sure, will not like what I'm saying right now, so they'll be quick to point out if this is the case. If I find out later that, you know, he's tied now after that, after he converted that penalty, he's tied now for the golden boot with Haaland. Like, if there's some big bonus headed his way, some kind of incentive, something significant financially for winning a golden boot, then I reserve the right to change my opinion on this if I find out new information that would further incentivize him to take that penalty. But if it was nothing more than just, no, I'm the penalty taker and I want to take it. Like, I don't know. I just thought, come on, man. Like, would it kill you to share the wealth a little bit with some teammates who are in desperate need to see a ball go in the back of the net?
Nah, I hear you. And I'm kind of with you. I'm also kind of with Pat. You want to avoid that embarrassment on the field. Don't forget, this is a club that's been pretty much in crisis all season long. Mm-hmm. And when you have a resounding victory that points towards good times or whatever, you want to keep the embarrassment in-house. So Palmer takes the penalty. There's two ways. Palmer should always take the penalty, blah, blah, blah, let him take the penalty. Or when Madueke is arguing over it, you stand back and let him kick it and then you discipline him. Behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. That's the way I see it. But I've seen it so many times, I wasn't massively.
And by the way, too, like, again, I'm not taking anything away from Palmer. I have eyes and a brain. I can see what I'm seeing here and he's great. But he's got 20 goals this season. Basically, half of them have come from the penalty spot. 9 of his 20 goals are penalties, meaning he's gotten to score a whole bunch of goals this season that oftentimes have been created by the work of others. That's not his fault. He's the designated penalty taker for good reason. He's elite, hasn't missed one. He's 9 for 9. But like, you've been the beneficiary of some good fortune in this golden boot race. So I don't know. Let's pay it forward. Like, let one of these other guys who desperately needs to see a ball go in the net. Like, Nicholas Jackson has been a punching bag all season. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought, like, would have been nice.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't think he's got a face to... he's been very much the, how am I putting up with this? Actually, no, that's not fair. I was going to say, how am I putting up with the rest of these guys as I carry them along? He hasn't been doing that.
No.
He's been very graceful about his goals and his good play.
What he did, I'm not saying that he was wrong. It's just like on a test. You can't, like, if you get the extra credit wrong, it doesn't hurt you. Like, Cole Palmer, by taking this penalty kick, he's not hurt by it. He's the penalty taker. Pacha has his back. Connor Gallagher has his back. Like, trust me, everyone on Twitter, everybody has his back. I just thought it would have been, it's extra credit, would have been a nice thing to let one of those guys kind of score a goal. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm not bothered about that. I wouldn't have included that in the mailbag.
Really? You would have not included the biggest controversy of the week?
No, but I don't know why it is. We've seen it so many times. Like, it's... I don't know.
Pochettino ended his press conference early, and a journalist, Matt Law, has been banned from Chelsea press conferences now over this. This wasn't just some small thing. It just dominated the headlines.
I guess. I've been living the European life.
No, you're mad. You're mad because I wasn't moved by the FA Cup replays. So now you're responding petulantly.
You think I'm that petty and small?
Oh.
You're right I am. We
just met here? Like,
all right, come on, move on. What's the next
one? Yeah. Merch in the Wild from Reed, who says, hi, Andrew and JJ. Wanted to share a hike I did this weekend. God, I love going on hikes. While repping Caught Offside gear, I did the Manitou Incline with my brother-in-law. 2,700 stairs at an average of 45-degree incline, starting at 6,500 elevation, 6,500 feet elevation. I figured a grueling climb up one of Colorado's most popular hikes would be an ideal opportunity to rep the pod. I got to say, this shirt is perfect for sweaty activities. Mm-hmm. The high-quality material keeps me dry and cool, while the cut is form-fitting and allows me to move freely. I'm greatly appreciative of the time and effort both of you put into the pod while juggling careers and family. The 2 to 3 hours a week I get to spend with the two of you provides me a sense of community I lack in my personal life, since most of my friends couldn't care less about the beautiful game.
Losers.
Thank you for all you do, Andrew and JJ. You've got a listener for life. Go Blues.
Ah, what a lovely email.
Yeah.
I had to include it.
That is nice.
Reed, you're the best in the world. And listen, you will find other people like us.
Well, I think he has friends. He just doesn't have other soccer-loving friends.
I know, but as we've talked about in the past, it's tough when your friends don't like soccer.
And you've committed to it in this way, because you need an outlet. And if we're those guys, keep emailing us. We'll be those people for you. Let's see, JJ. Dave Morrill on Morgan Gibbs-White versus Wolves. This is very interesting. He says, hey, guys, just want to offer some context for the Gibbs-White celebration against Wolves you were speculating about. The local rivalry might have something to do with it, but more so I think it's because he simply left Wolves on a bad note. And now he's a total D when he plays against us. He hates us for some reason, even though Wolves was the team that developed him. And we, Wolves fans, can't stand him and his fingers in his ear celebration. Anyway, thanks again, as usual, for the pod. JJ, I did a little research here on this after I read this. And I don't know about the where he says he hates us for some reason. So I read a little piece that he wrote about, Morgan Gibbs-White wrote about himself in July of 2023. I guess for England, they had some of the under 21 guys write like a mini bio. He referred to his time at Wolves, which was almost 14 years, as a quote, a good journey. He had some really nice things to say about one of their under 21 coaches, Scott Sellers. And when he left Wolves, he posted a really heartfelt message on Twitter. He said, this is so hard to write. I don't even know where to begin, honestly. Wolves has been my whole life. I've been at this club since the age of eight. The club means everything to me. I want to thank everyone who has played such a huge influence over my career. He goes on about his teammates. This is the place where I turned from a young boy into a man. He said, this has been the hardest decision of my life, but one I felt I had to take at this stage of my career. It doesn't sound like a guy who hates Wolves or a guy who was leaving Wolves under bad terms. So, I mean, I know Dave says that in there, and look, he's a Wolves fan, so far be it from me to correct him, but the sentence of he hates us for some reason, even though Wolves is the team that developed him. I don't know. I feel like I need more there, because it doesn't feel like that based on the comments made by Gibbs-White when he left.
No, and Dave, I'm not accusing you of just going with the fans on this one, but like a lot of the time, they're like when the fans dig deep into a player that's left, and why do we hate him again? Like, I need more detail here too.
Gibbs-White even said in his statement when he left, I'll always be a Wolves fan and watch out for our results on match days.
I do think the local rivalry might have something to do with it, is the point here.
We also don't know, social media can be good. It can also be a horrible cesspool. Gibbs-White is on social media. We don't know things that have been sent to him, things that he's, I don't know. So like, who knows? It doesn't feel like he hates Wolves, but his actions kind of led you to believe that a little bit, the way he celebrated. But I don't know. It still remains a bit of a mystery to me, that one.
Yeah.
JJ, you read the last one here from Bob Harrison. I don't know.
Bob got in touch about, because I quickly read some my on repeat off Spotify. This is the most popular songs on my Spotify. Mm. JJ, thanks for the suggestions. Super Heaven is quite good. Doylestown, Pennsylvania. But Kisses is absolutely brilliant. As an older American, I had never heard of Slow Dive. That's the band who have Kisses out. Or Shoegaze. So Shoegaze would be like, I suppose, modern Shoegaze would be Interpol. The origins of Shoegaze was coming out of the 80s with My Bloody Valentine, Jesus and Mary Chain, and Slow Dive were the big English band. Their first album was the standard bearer for Shoegaze, and they've had a few albums in between, but they came back with this album last year, and it was just so well received, and it's awesome. It's absolutely brilliant, and Kisses is about as good a song as I've heard in like forever. I just need to get the name of the most recent album. Oh, Everything is Alive, released in September of 2023. And it ranked really highly in a lot of its reviews are very, very good. Guardian gave it 4 out of 5. Pitchfork, which is so hard to get a good review out of, 7.7 out of 10. So it's an excellent album, and Kisses is my favorite song of last year. Beautiful, absolutely brilliant. And I'm looking for them to do a tour in America. I don't know where you are, Bob, but I know they're touring this summer in the Southwest. They're not coming to New York. Makes no sense to me. But yeah, Slow Dive, very good band.
Oh, there you go.
What? What?
I blacked out there. I'm just coming to.
Listen, Pandora boy.
I had somebody, I was looking for it actually while you were talking there. Somebody reached out to me and was like, I knew he was going to make fun of you. I'm a Pandora guy too. Stay strong. I wish I got to find who it was. And I also want to give a shout out.
Us.
I was dozens. And I also want to give a shout out to at CO Coogies on Twitter, who wrote at A Gunling. For the record, I absolutely thought of breastfeeding when JJ referenced pump and dump. I was not aware of the economic term.
And pump and dump, I got it right. I got the use.
We were
of
both
it.
Right.
I know. I got the use of it wrong.
Oh,
yeah.
But I was right about what I was about the breastfeeding terminology of pump.
Pump
and dump
is like it's basically a shorthand for insider trading, like knowing something, buying a stock, then dumping.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's
which
a
this podcast does not want you to do.
No,
just
I don't
in
know
case
how
the
any
feds
of that,
are listening.
I don't even know how any of that works. All right. So this is not your place for financial advice. Trust me. This was a joy. This quarterfinal stage of the competition was a joy.
Amazing.
I can only say a prayer. Let's all gather now and pray that the semifinals delivers in the same way that the quarterfinals does, because that was just so much fun. And it was so much fun reliving all of it with you and all of you fine listeners out there. This was awesome. JJ, you got anything else?
Just one quick thing. The Design a Shirt program, Caught Offside Design a Shirt program, which we launched on the last pod, which some of you I know are only just listening to. An amazing response to that. Just remember, submit your idea. You don't have to do graphic drawings. You don't have to do...
No, some people have just sent me a tweet saying like, hey, it should say this.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's all... Sure. Okay, cool.
Send the tweet at CO Soccer Pod, or you can contact us at caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com, which is probably one of the best ways.
Is there a Reddit thread? I have not seen...
Is a Reddit thread. If you go on Reddit r/caughtoffside, you'll get it there. So thank you very much for them, but we got to get out.
Yeah. Hey, this was awesome. JJ, have a great weekend to you. I say.
Check you later, fun boy. See Check you later. Check you later, full Krug. Huh? No.
Oh, my God. Bye.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.